It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and DNR forester Mark Vitosh will be here to answer your questions about trees and other plants you want to grow or grow better. You'll hear about selecting the best tree for your yard and which trees to prune and not to prune in the spring. Call in with your questions at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. From trunk to stem, it's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, just after the news. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander. It's Horticulture Day, and Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Department of Natural Resources forester Mark Vitosh are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life, anything you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. The Plant and Tree Guys are here. Welcome, Richard and Mark. How are you today?
Good. Good morning.
Good Hello.
Morning. Good to have you here. And we'll have some callers calling in, I know. I want to first ask you, since we have had reports of some flooding in various parts of the state, not to the extent so far, thank goodness, as in 2008, but it's the potential of flooding is always around us. I've heard reports that flooding can actually be good for plants or trees. Is that accurate? Is there any kind of sense in that?
Well, the thing you got to remember is, I don't know if necessarily good, but these trees along the floodplains have adapted and grow there because of those conditions. They actually adapt to high water situations, saturated soils. They're used to soils coming in, fill, those kind of things. And some species have developed that way. So examples would be silver maple, cottonwood, green ash, willow, sycamore, even pin oak, swamp white oak. These species have adapted. So their growing conditions, they're adaptive to high water. Now, they're adaptive to that to some extent. When you have things like 2008 or 1993 where you get them at different times of year or that water stays up, at some point, even for those species, it can become a negative thing. But I guess from the good thing is those species are adaptive to these conditions. Now, the other thing is some species depend on flooding to actually propagate. Examples are cottonwood and silver maple. They basically like areas of disturbed ground for their seed, and their seeds come fairly early in the spring. So after the floods disturb the ground, you get this ruffling of the soil and you get bare soil. Those seeds can then germinate. I noticed yesterday even the silver maple are already flowering. Mm-hmm. With the warm weather, their flowers, they're not like big showy flowers, but there's flowers there. They're going to have seed on in a couple weeks, and with these flooding waters or high waters, as those recede down, they can take advantage of that. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily good
right,
for them, but
right,
they're adaptive to those conditions. Okay. Whereas a lot of our upland species or species, let's say, for example, trees that were planted in parts of Cedar Rapids in the 500-year floodplain or the 100-year floodplain that normally aren't in the flooding conditions, if they take water, they're not very happy. These species are, let's say, they can deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you call that happy, they're adaptive.
Okay, okay. Richard, did you want to weigh in on that anywhere, or should we go to our first caller?
We can go on.
Okay, all right.
Mark did a good job.
Thank
okay,
you.
That sounds fine. We'll go to Bill in Brazil, Iowa, not the country, but Brazil. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the program. What's your question?
Actually, a very quick one. We have heavy clay soil down here. For evergreens, are there any with as wet as it's been that would do well? And then a second question, we have a flowering quince, great big one, that sends up shoots. Could we transplant, dig out some of the shoots and try transplanting them, and is there a way that would be effective?
I'll start with the first one, Richard, and I'll let you take the second one. As far as real heavy soils, if it stays pretty saturated, there really aren't a lot of good evergreens that are going to be adaptive to that. There are some conifers that will shed that are deciduous that will adapt. One example is bald cypress, especially if you're in the southern part of the state. That's adaptive. Another one would be larch. Larch is somewhat adaptive to moisture conditions, but bald cypress is probably the best. But as far as any of the pines, spruce, or any of those, they pretty much like moist, well-drained conditions.
Yeah, okay.
As far as the flowering quince, that plant by its very nature tends to sucker or produce shoots from the root system, and just like a lilac tends to. And so if you went out in early spring and before the actual shrub leaves out and you dug some of these suckers up, and if you include a small part of the root system, that may be enough for that little shoot to survive and grow. So you can try that. But you want to do it early before the plant begins to leaf out.
Like right about now?
Probably early to mid-April. I think right now it may be too wet. And so you may have trouble doing that. So maybe later on next week or early April.
Okay. And anything in particular other than just have decent soil that'll drain?
They're fairly easy to grow. Basically make sure it has at least 6 hours of sun and is a fairly well-drained soil.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Bill. We appreciate it. Bye-bye. We'll go on to Dr. Addy from Des Moines. Welcome to the program, Dr. Addy.
Hi.
What's your question?
Yes, I want to grow a an evergreen or cypress or something, a fast-growing hedge on the north side of a property to do a screen, and I'd like it to not get any more than maybe 15, 20 feet tall, something that would be nice habitat for birds in the winter.
Well, if you're looking at evergreen, one of the better evergreens that's fairly adaptive to most soils except highly saturated soils would be some type of arborvita. And there's a couple different cultivars of arborvita, and you'd have to check. One is Techne, and I think there's a few others that will be in that 12 to 15-foot tall range and will act as a hedge.
Are you familiar with the Hy-Vee Hall where the elevators are? You look outside and there's a evergreen or something.
Actually,
a bunch of things
I was over there 2 weeks ago, but I came in from a different direction. Are you familiar with what she's talking about, Richard?
I don't recall seeing those. No, I'm not.
Okay, because it's fairly shaded and it's really nice looking. And maybe it is that arborvitae technique.
Yeah, I think arborvitae would be your best choice. And there are a number of varieties on there. So make sure that what you choose is one that's going to grow to the desired height and spread. Technique is a very, very tough variety. And it can get to be like 10 to 15 feet tall. But it also can get to be like 10 foot wide. So it's a fairly large plant. There are more upright or columnar varieties that might only be, let's say, 3 or 4 feet wide, but their height might be just maybe 6 foot or 8 foot. So,
yeah, I always see them splayed open with the ice in the winter, and I don't like that.
Always going to be a challenge with arborvita.
How about a cedar hedge?
There are junipers out there. You'd have to check in the trade, but if you can get a juniper, and that's what Eastern Red Cedar is. It's a juniper, but there's multiple different types of junipers out there. And you could look to see, I know there are some on the market that also are columnar that are more upright, but you'd have to check with those. But there may be some potential. And as far as spacing, base that on what they estimate what the width of those plants are going to be.
Okay.
So you don't get your plants too close together.
Sure. And those are about the fastest growing, the arborvitae or the juniper?
Well, there's going to be your best. The problem is those are probably going to be your best evergreen-type hedges. Sometimes people use yew, but they tend to really spread out and sometimes need more maintenance. The thing with the arborvitae, other than the threat of the ice, is they usually don't need a lot of trimming or maintenance. You get what you see, and they tend to hold their shape pretty well. Junipers do that fairly well, too.
Yeah, the arborvitae really are fairly reliable. They really have very few insect problems, disease problems, and for the most part, they're pretty reliable. Deer do love them if you have a deer in the neighborhood.
Oh, I do.
Well, then that's going to be a challenge.
During the winter months, they find that foliage very, very appetizing. So,
oh, that's why I found their little spores over by my arborvitae.
Sounds like that'll be a good choice for you, though, if that's what you want to do.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate the call. We'll go next to Barry in Council Bluffs. Barry, welcome to Horticulture Day and Talk of Iowa with Mark Vitosh and Richard Giron. What's your question today?
I have a question about a variety of pear trees. I've got a small space, well, pretty good size space in my backyard for some dwarf fruit trees, and I was checking whether I would like to try a Seckel variety or a honey sweet pear tree back there. Any suggestions?
Well, first of all, you typically need two different varieties. And so one variety by itself typically is not very productive. You need two different varieties for cross-pollination and maximum fruit set. You could plant Seckel. That's fine. It has a fairly small fruit, but you can plant that. Bartlett, there are a number of varieties, but the key would be you need two different ones. And if space is limited, make sure it's a dwarf or semi-dwarf.
And the honey sweet says it doesn't need a pollinator.
Well, typically, they if you want maximum production, you typically need two. They may produce some on their own. Many of them do. But if you want maximum production, you typically want two different varieties. That will give you cross-pollination and maximum fruit set.
Okay. That's what I needed. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Barry. We appreciate it. We're going to be going into a break pretty soon here, but we'll take one call. Leanne from Davenport. Leanne, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Good morning. I just had a quick question about pruning trees.
Okay.
I have red dogwood in the front yard, and it's full of blossoms. And I also have a larger tamarack in the backyard, and both need to be pruned on their lower limbs.
Well, I'll start with the larch, and I'll let Richard finish with the red dogwood. The larch, I mean, right now, if you need to just prune off some branches, you could probably still do that the next couple weeks.
Okay.
Go ahead with the dogwood there, Richard.
Well, as far as the red twig dogwoods, that's a shrub.
It's not a red twig. It's a Cornus florida.
Oh, it's one of those. those are kind of iffy in Iowa, so I guess the first thing that I would do would be very cautious on that. Don't do a whole lot of pruning. Sometimes after a hard winter, you may have some dieback. So I would proceed very cautiously on that and actually probably do very little pruning unless you have some branches that are real low that need to come off and wait until the plant begins to leaf out. And then if you notice some dieback, then go ahead and prune out the dead limbs. But normally with those, we don't do a whole lot of pruning.
I would actually do what Richard said, actually let it bloom and go to the early summer before you decide if you're going to prune anything off.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Leanne. Good luck with that plant. We appreciate the call. You're listening to Horticulture Day and Talk of Iowa. Call in with your questions at 1-866-780-9100. We're going to take a very short break. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're tuned to Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR forester Mark Vitosh are here to answer your questions about trees and other plants you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Ann in Urbandale. Ann, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yes, thanks. I wanted to know if crab trees are capable of pollinating apple trees, and then what's the maximum spacing for the best pollination?
In most cases, yes, they can. So if you have an apple tree and a crab apple, let's say they're within 50 to 100 feet, then they should cross-pollinate.
Great. Thanks.
Well, thanks.
Are there any species that don't?
There might be a few, but I think the vast majority would be okay.
Okay, thanks much.
Well, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. We'll go next to Cynthia in Exira. Is that right?
Yes, Exira.
Exira. Welcome to Horticulture Day, Cynthia.
Thank you. We have an old, very, very tall tree that has been called both a cedar tree and a juniper tree. We don't know exactly what it is. But this winter, when we were having the really bitter weather in southwestern Iowa, one night I came home and I heard the tree kind of cracking. It had a lot of ice in the needles. It seems very sturdy, very healthy, but it is very old. The crook is about 5 feet up from the ground, and there are three massive stems, whatever you would call them. And I'm really worried about it splitting, not because I see big new raw wood, but there's definitely a crack that has come down. Is there some way to hire someone to wire or band or do something to support this tree, or does that only make it more vulnerable to wind?
It really depends, Cynthia, as far as what the crack is, where it's located, and those kind of things. There are ways to cable and brace a tree to try to give it support, depending on, again, how big the plant is, where it's connected, how bad the joint is, those kind of things. What I would do is try to find a local tree service or even a certified arborist with the International Society of Arboriculture. See if you can get an arborist to look at that first to evaluate it. That's the first thing you need to do. And then see if that is an option or an alternative.
How do you find someone like that in a rural area where we have fewer and fewer experts at things like this?
Yeah. How close are you to Council Bluffs?
80 miles.
Okay. Well, I would check in that area because there may be some in the Omaha area or in your area. What I would do is actually if you go to the International Society of Arboriculture website, you can actually search for certified arborists. Also, if you can't find a certified arborist, you may just talk to local folks in the area who have had an arborist or a tree service come and see who does some cabling and bracing or who can evaluate it for you in that local area. Also, if you go to Iowa State University Forestry Extension website, they have a list of consulting arborists.
Great.
And sometimes those consulting arborists will travel to look to – they have a whole list of things they do, like tree appraisals, construction evaluations, but some will also look at hazard trees or just the health of the tree. So you might be able to – they may not be able to do the work, but they may be able to at least evaluate the tree to see if there's anything that can be done to it. The other thing they may look at, depending on the location, sometimes there may be nothing you can do about it. And if it's not, if it does split and it's not going to fall on anything,
it's close to a building.
If it's close, then you really want to evaluate it to see what the damage is and if anything can be done.
Second question, since you're tree people, a lot of lily of the valley around the base of evergreen trees. Does that weaken the tree?
No.
Great. Thank you so much.
As long as you're not digging them up and transplanting them all over and causing root damage, then you're okay.
They're old. Yeah. And then they just keep spreading and they're beautiful instead of dirt. So.
And your tree is probably an eastern red cedar,
which
is scientifically a juniper. It's Juniperus, which is the genus, most likely. So that's why you've probably heard juniper and cedar mixed together.
Thank you.
Because the common name is cedar, but it's scientifically most likely a juniper.
Great to know.
Thanks for calling, Cynthia. We appreciate the call. We'll go to Loretta in Donaldson, I should say. Loretta, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Well, we have a family debate here. We have a full-grown ancient catalpa tree, and out of the base, out of the trunk, is it's 10 foot, kind of a separate tree, but it looks like it's connected to the trunk yet. The debate is whether we cut the older tree off if that little one will continue to grow or if we'll kill it.
It's probably a base sprout or root sprout, if it is catalpa. to me, if the bigger tree is healthy and there's no problems with it, I guess I would actually leave it.
It's looking balder every year.
Okay. So you can go a couple ways. The problem is sometimes those sprouts, especially on an older tree like that, may not be well connected. And so even if you do take the bigger tree down, it may be difficult to do without harming that sprout. And then if you leave it, a lot of times catalpas have a lot of decay in them. So if there's a lot of decay and there's a new sprout coming off that, stability of the tree may not be that good in the long term anyway.
Oh,
So kind of going back to the last caller, you may want to have an arborist or somebody take a look at it to see what the structure of the established tree is and see what the connection is and look at the potential options. But being if it's a big catalpa, there's probably a good chance that it's fairly hollow because that's fairly common. It doesn't mean it is 100%, yeah. But even if it is, the structure may not be there to hold that new sprout.
Okay. All right.
Does that help?
Yeah, that helps.
Okay.
Good luck
okay.
with the family debate. I hope it works out.
Okay, thank
Thanks
you.
For calling, Loretta. We mm-hmm. appreciate it. You're listening to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day, and Mark Vitosh, our DNR forester, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran are with us. If you have a question for them, 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have an email from Jeff in Carbon Cliff, Illinois. My home, he says, has a set of steps going up to the front door, and they are about 3 feet tall and 4 feet wide. I'd like to get some bushes of small trees to help blend the steps into the house, and that's on the north side of the house. We would like to try and avoid the typical green bushes that seems everybody uses, but is there a good plant that can soak up plenty of water during days with extended periods of rainfall, but can also be fine with the summer dry spells?
Well, that may be a difficult situation.
Okay.
My first thought would be a yew. Now, they can be grown in sun or shade, and they can be pruned or sheared easily, so you can kind of maintain them at a given size. But they are just a green shrub. But they are very adaptable, and they might be a good choice. Now, they don't like extremely wet soils. As long as the site drains well, they're okay, but they don't like wet soils. But my first thought would be some type of yew or taxus.
Okay, that answers that. Bill from Waterloo is on the line, and welcome to Horticulture Day, Bill. What's your question?
Yeah, thank you. I have a clematis that's growing on a trellis, and last year was the first year that it took off really good. Do I prune back the old dead growth? I clear to the ground, or...?
Well, as far as pruning and clematis, there are different types, and that kind of determines how we approach it. There are varieties or types that bloom strictly on new growth. So we can actually prune those back to near ground level. They'll grow back and they'll still bloom. Then we have types that bloom on old wood. And so with those, we typically wait and determine how much of the plant is still alive. And then we prune out the dead wood. And some years we have so much dead wood that we don't have very many flowers. But in that case, if we prune it back to the ground, it won't bloom at all. So what I'd probably suggest, if you're not sure what type it is, is just wait and see. And then when you start to see new growth coming out on the existing vines, then look for the uppermost new growth on those vines and then cut it off just above those points.
Great.
You should be fine either way.
The other question about this same plant is that, like with the heavy snow melt off and stuff, it was standing in a couple inches of water for 4 or 5 days, and sometimes it'll do that if we get a heavy rain. Is that going to drown it? Or?
They're not real fond of wet soils, and I would be concerned about that, especially later on in the spring if it stays extremely wet. They can develop some type of a crown rot.
Mm-hmm.
And cause the plant to die. So hopefully that's not the case, but if it does persist and the ground stays wet for a long period, that's a possibility.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go next to Phil in Iowa City. Phil, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
I have a dogwood, and when we got it, it was about 10 inches tall. And now it's about between 5 and 6 feet tall, and I need—I'd like to know when will it start blooming? It's the pink variety.
So it's a flowering dogwood.
Yes.
And it's how tall right now? 6 foot.
Yeah, between 6 and 7 feet.
Well, my guess is it probably will be a few more years.
Really?
So maybe another 3 or 4 years, it should start to bloom. Now.
Okay.
If we have a really cold winter, it might actually destroy the flower buds.
Oh.
And so, for example, not this past winter, but the year before, we had very, very cold temperatures. And when you have those very cold temperatures, like minus 20, minus 25, that can definitely kill the flower buds, where even if the tree is mature enough, it may not bloom the following spring. But this basically is a maturity issue. It simply has to grow a few more years before it can actually bloom.
Okay.
A lot of plants fall in that 10 to 12-year range, 10 to 20. Some are older, but on average, it's usually in that 10 to 15-year range for flowering.
I also transplanted a rhododendron about 3 years ago. It was about maybe three and a half to 4 feet tall. And it's doing fine, but it doesn't bloom either. And it's in the shade for the most part.
Well, that may be a factor. Now, the flower buds typically on your rhododendrons do form in mid to late summer. And so they're actually there during the winter months. If we have a cold winter, a very cold winter, that could damage or destroy the flower buds. Mm-hmm. But when you move something, you transplant a tree or a shrub, that does damage the plant or weaken the plant somewhat. And for that reason, it may take a year or two to recover from that damage before it can bloom again, because only really healthy, vigorous plants tend to bloom well. So it could be partly that. It also could be partly the shade. Rhododendrons, the true rhododendrons that retain their foliage during the winter months,
yes,
they typically like to have around maybe 3 to 4 hours of sun. So it shouldn't be complete heavy shade, but maybe 3 or 4 hours of sun. That's kind of their ideal environment.
I didn't know that.
And they would prefer, if they had a choice, they would prefer morning sun, afternoon shade, rather than the hot afternoon sun.
Right.
But they typically like about 3 to 4 hours of sun, some direct sun.
And what about acid soil?
They also need an acid soil, but that shouldn't, I mean, if the plant itself is growing well, it's not due to the soil acidity. They do like a soil pH around, 4, 5, 5.5 is what they prefer. And so if you plant one of those, basically what you should do is dig a nice wide hole and take half of the soil from that hole and mix that with an equal amount of Canadian sphagnum peat, and then backfill with that 50-50 mix. Canadian peat is very, very acidic, so if you mix the two, the soil and the peat together, you should lower the pH very nicely. But if the pH was too high, the plant itself would simply not be growing well. It might be kind of chlorotic, kind of yellow, very thin. So it would be fairly obvious that the pH is not right.
Okay. One more quick question,
if
I may.
Yeah.
I planted some fall-blooming crocus in the... I guess it was early spring, and this was about 3 or 4 years ago, and they come up every spring, but they don't even come up in the fall, and they've never bloomed.
It sounds like you might, maybe they're not getting enough sun, or the foliage is being cut back prematurely. All the bulb-type plants, like your tulips and daffodils, they're basically food storage structures. And they have to be able to manufacture and store enough food in the bulb for them to flower. If they don't have enough food stored up, they'll send up foliage, but they don't send up flowers. So you don't want to cut them back prematurely as far as the foliage, and make sure they get enough sunlight so they can manufacture food for the bulb.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill. We appreciate the questions. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Lou in Des Moines. Lou, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Actually, it's Des Moines.
Des Moines, I'm sorry. Moines. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, no problem.
Okay.
I've got two Asian pear trees that I transplanted late summer. They're probably about an inch and a half thick diameter stalk. And when I was transplanting them, I lost a lot of the soil bulb. And we're talking about maybe a 3 foot diameter bulb. And I pretty much placed them 6 feet from where they were, same distance apart. But after doing that and fertilizing a little bit, water, the leaves went black.
Okay, not good.
Not good, huh?
Nope, not good.
Okay.
So this was done exactly when again?
This was last, this has been late summer, early fall.
Okay. I would go out and just take a twig from the tree, mm-hmm. grab it, and just take your thumbnail and just kind of scrape off the bark
okay.
down to the wood. And just do that on a small area. And if the tree is still alive, the tissue directly beneath the bark should be kind of greenish mm-hmm. white. And sure. that would be a very hopeful sign. But if you do that and the tissue beneath the bark is kind of brownish,
mm-hmm.
that's not a very encouraging sign. Then at mm-hmm. that point, if you find brown, I would take a small twig and just try to bend it.
And see if it breaks or if it bends.
Right, right. If the branch is dead, it has dried out and now it's kind of brittle and it should kind of uh-huh. snap. If it's okay. live branch, it should be limber and it really shouldn't snap. So, but I would just try to scrape off the bark first and go from there.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. We've got an email from Marilyn from Dallas County. She says, we have not even started pruning our trees and shrubs. Can you give a quick way to tell us what can still be pruned and what cannot at this point? We have walnuts, oaks, maples, dwarf lilacs, which are huge, hydrangea, lilacs, and spirea.
Well, no oaks. We don't want to prune oaks at all.
Okay.
And actually, we often say when things start to, buds start to swell and start to flower, we would stay off some of those trees too. So I noticed Dallas County, they're kind of probably close to us as far as where the plants are. If they have the maples flowering, I would probably stay away from those. But like the walnuts, they could still go after some of those. What about some of the shrubs there, Richard?
As far as shrubs, I would say you have probably 3 or 4 weeks to do that. I basically like to prune them for the most part before they start to leaf out. And so if you can get that done by April 10th, you should be fine.
Okay. We'll go now to Marilyn in Boone. Marilyn, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Yes, we've had extensive damage to some of our yews and the lower branches on our white pine trees because of the deer population, and we were just wondering if those yews would come back from that and if the needles on the white pines would also regrow.
Well, as far as yews are concerned, good news. Yews are a little bit different than most evergreens. They have the ability to leaf out on bare branches because they have buds along the branches, and so they can do that. It may take the yews maybe a couple years to recover fully, but they do have that ability.
I'll give you the bad news on the pines then. Pines have their buds at the tips. And so basically if those buds are gone, if there's just needles left, then they're not going to put on new foliage. So basically those branches will probably not survive in most cases. Once in a while you'll see some weird things. Because we actually shear Christmas trees, but we shear them in the summer early enough so they actually set new buds. But if those buds are taken off during the winter, usually that tree is not going to put on new buds the following spring. So if most of the buds are gone, then those lower branches will probably have a difficult time staying established.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Marilyn. We'll go to Patty in Des Moines. Patty, welcome to the program. A few minutes remaining. What's your question?
I have some property behind my fence in between the alley. It's the length of my yard, probably 4 feet, and I had cut down. It wasn't tended to for years. All the foliage back there, the tree's probably 3 inches in diameter, and I don't want anything to grow back there this year, and I'm worried about erosion. What do I do to keep things from growing, and those roots will probably keep the soil in place? It's probably a 45-degree slope.
Well, you could cover the area with some type of a mulch, like wood chips, and that should prevent erosion. If you have, let's say, little sprouts coming up from volunteer trees or shrubs, you could use Roundup on them and kill those. But you could use a mulch, definitely. It could be a wood chip mulch, whatever you prefer.
So I don't have to put tar on the tree stumps? Or
No, you typically... Let's say you have a volunteer tree and you cut it off. I would let the tree leaf out in the spring, then cut it off, and immediately put Roundup directly on the cut surface, and that should destroy the entire root system, and it shouldn't resprout. And then you can just cover the area with, like, wood chip, shredded bark, even rock if you prefer that, and that should keep most weeds from germinating and growing in that area.
If they do resprout, you can then just take a small sprayer, small bottle, and just sprout or just spray those little sprouts and kill them during the summer too.
Thanks, Patty. Good luck with that. And we appreciate everyone who's called in. Another Horticulture Day is done, but we'll be back next week. It'll be definitely officially spring then. Thanks to Mark Vitosh and Richard Geron. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Technical assistance today from Jeff Schmidt. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you.